What's up, man?
Well, you just heard Jesse say, "What's up, man?" to somebody, and that's because, hey, I love it. Listen, it's okay, man. It's all right. It's all good. The reason that I am in a room solo, feeling like I'm having a conversation just with myself, which is, hey, that's not the worst Friday morning I've ever had, you know, I'm up where we record. And Jesse is joining by cell phone today, and we do that twofold. If you've followed along, you noticed the episode that we're recording now is probably, you're saying, man, I guess these guys quit. No, we haven't quit, but life happens, and we've both had a couple little sicknesses that got in the way, and then schedules, and I think we've had this episode probably planned three times, and so we're actually getting that done today. But twofold, Jesse's not here, and so a little different feel today if you hear a little different in the audio. But we're also testing out this technology that we have to we've got some interviews lined up in the future that we want to do, and some of those can happen in person, but some of them will need to be patching that person in. And so you guys just get to experience that with us. So how you doing there, Jesse Crow? Who was that you said hello to? Somebody you work with?
That is, so I have a little bit of work history, I work at a high school.
Right.
I'm a maintenance person at a high school. So,
right.
You know, I'm here walking through the hallways doing stuff.
Yeah.
And as I'm talking to you guys, that's a guy walked by that I know, and I totally forgot what we were doing for a second.
Well, that's all right. Let's just hope it doesn't get into some of our other conversations we have on the phone with each other and forget we're recording a spiritual podcast. We are spiritual people.
I didn't want to be rude.
Yeah, no, I think that adds some realness. We have said, and you know this to be true, that Saints and Pioneers is very unedited and real and all that stuff in more than one way. So
that's right.
Trying this new technology out. And before we get started, I'm going to tell you, and we've talked about this, but something maybe our audience doesn't know about, something we never probably thought we would see, but Jesus Christ was on Jimmy Fallon this week.
Yes,
now,
he was.
Not from his, you know, throne in heaven, seated at the right hand of the Father. But if you've listened long enough, you know Jesse and I are fans of The Chosen. Whether you've heard us talk about that here, we probably have almost every episode about like we have John Eldridge. You can definitely tell those two things are pretty influential to us. But if you've had real life conversations with us as a friend, a brother, a sister, heard us at where we serve the church at Southside, we talk The Chosen up, and we'll do it again. If you haven't watched, go watch. Probably realest depiction of Jesus we've ever seen on screen, I think. But Jesus was not on Jimmy Fallon. The actor who plays Jesus on The Chosen was on Jimmy Fallon, Jonathan Rumi. And we've taught this, Jesse, but man, just the way he handles himself on these kind of mainstream, you know, media platforms. I know he's been on The View, and he doesn't do it in an aggravating way, but just always in such a compassionate way, how he shares his faith. But I was not prepared for the clip that I sent you the other day of Jonathan Rumi, Jesus from The Chosen, got his start from his impersonations. We said he did Marlon Brando, Ray Romano, and I forget the other one again. Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan. Yeah, he sings It's a Bitsy Spider, pulls out the Wayfarers out of his pocket, everything, as Bob Dylan. But do you remember the show he gets his start on, right? Let the folks know here.
Celebrity Deathmatch. I used to love that show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so hilarious. For Celebrity Deathmatch, for those that maybe tune into a spiritual podcast and the last thing you expected here was Jesus on Celebrity Deathmatch, That was MTV back in the day, closer to when they used to play music videos. And by the way, don't you remember that being a big deal? Like when a band would release, like, you know, they would even set times like it was going to be a music video premiere. This was before the days of DVR, but it's like Friday night at like 8 o'clock, Van Halen's got a new, you know, whatever. And it was like, God, those were the days, man. But anyway,
yeah,
you can watch MTV now and never see anything about music. But this was Celebrity Deathmatch. It was the claymation little things, and, you know, they would fight to the death. So there you go. Jesus from The Chosen, of all places, calls in and leaves a voicemail of his impersonations and gets a gig for Celebrity Deathmatch. So file that in things you didn't think you'd hear about today if you hadn't watched it.
But
go Google the clip. Pretty fun. So anyway, well, we are back at it with Western theology. We've said this, I think, every episode, but I believe each episode you listen to, hopefully God has some value for you there. That's why we do these things. It helps us and encourages us to talk things out, and hope as you listen along, it does the same for you. But on this particular one, while each episode has value, for sure would encourage you to go back, listen to the whole thing as a series, because I really believe it's more impactful that way. And so just a reminder, we've talked this settler theology versus a pioneering theology. And today we're in chapter 5, but just a quick recap. So far, in those comparing and contrasting, we've looked at the views of the church, of God, of Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. And today's episode is actually titled in the book, Bishop. Probably not as familiar in most of our circles. You're going to be more familiar with the term deacon or elder. And so that's what we're talking about today. So just to hop right in it, and then I've got a question for Jesse. Just his experience with deacons in his past places where he served. But in settler theology, the deacon is compared to the bank president, a chief executive, very well manicured, well dressed, respected in the community, impressive, and kind of all no nonsense, all business is the way that the deacon is represented in settler theology. And so I'd be curious, Jesse, like, you know, we've served together for a long time now, but obviously, like in the past, you know, we would kind of intermingle and show up at different events and things together with some of our connection, but grew up in different but kind of similar church backgrounds. What's the is this description from settler theology, the chief executive, the well-dressed, respected, all of this, is this kind of the view that you had of deacons, like out of the traditional settings that you came from? Maybe talk on that just a little.
Yes. I mean, mine is kind of mixed. Like I have, yes, a lot of you want your brightest and best, you know, a lot of churches, you know, they want their polished guys. First of all, funny thing. So I served for almost 11 years at a church in McCalla with mine and your friend Mike Skelton.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to lovingly refer to our deacons, which we called them elders.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of a new word. That's kind of the cool hip word, elder. But we would kind of, just between me and him, they were called deke heads.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that you probably want to subscribe that to your current church setting. So, keep that on the keep that on the low if you do.
That's but anyway, that is a very accurate description with a lot of, a lot of churches, and I feel like, you know, a lot of mega churches or churches that aspire to be kind of mega churches that have the polished veneer,
mm-hmm.
you know, they do call their deacons elders and all that stuff. You do see a very produced, polished kind of person that usually fills those roles.
Right.
It's the guy that never says a cuss word, mm-hmm. that, you know, it seems to have his outer world in order. And not that there's necessarily anything wrong with that,
right?
Because I do think there's something to be said for people who have some order to their life, that have their, seem to have their outer world together. A lot of times you find really godly people who, you know, God has blessed, and they, and they have, you know, they seem to have, their life is a, you know, seems to be pretty well put together. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there is, there definitely is a sense that I've kind of grown up with, that it's like there is a certain type of person. Obviously, biblically now, if we get into the biblical part of this, there is a certain person that, that should be sought after to fill these roles.
Yeah.
But I think the church has made a mistake by simply the outer appearance.
Mm.
And now I have been in church roles where they did pray over, and they, you know, who would fill those roles. And, but I think there is a certain sense of, you know, let's not choose old, the guy that's the roofer, that's got dirt under his fingernails, that don't, you know, that's, mm-hmm. Let's pick the guy who's, you know, kind of polished and kind of got his crap together. And, you know, so yeah, I think my experience, that's kind of been the way it is, with churches. There's definitely a mold that you got to fit, you know, to be in, to lead in that way. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and
which,
in case,
which in the, and to say this,
right,
in the traditional sense, like in the biblical sense, you know, in our church now, those are positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the biblical sense, these were servants.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
These were people that passed out the food to the poor people.
That's
these
right.
were the people that they were the behind the scenes, probably never seen very often. You know, it was from a biblical perspective, it was definitely. I have one funny story I'll share real quick.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Joel Frederick, who is the pastor of a local church here. Years ago, this has been, 15, 16 years ago, mm-hmm. maybe longer, he was on staff at the same church he's at now, but he was a different role. He's head pastor of the church he's at. But so they had a janitor at this church, like a custodian,
mm-hmm.
who during the week, that's what he did. He cleaned, and he also fixed things, and we all knew the guy because I was going to the church at the time.
Right.
Super nice guy, just a godly dude, and just the most genuine, kindest person. Probably should have been a deacon. I don't know if he ever was.
Right.
But on a Sunday morning, I remember he was coming into church with his family,
mm-hmm.
like not working. He's coming to worship. One of the deacons, there was a dog that took a crap on the steps.
Mm.
And the deacon goes over there to him very sharply and says, "There's dog crap on the steps. You need to get out there and clean that up." And
oh,
I remember Joel,
man.
Frederick, and I was so proud of Joel for this. He stopped the guy and he said, "You know where the broom is? You do it."
Yeah. Yeah.
He's off the clock today.
That's right.
And man, he put that
way
dude
to go,
in
Joel.
His place.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, man, because I mean, like, that's really kind of the sense of these people are in power and they kind of run the show and stuff, but from the biblical sense, which I know we're going to get into that with the other side of this, but
mm-hmm.
man, you've got to have a servant's heart, man. If you want to lead the church, I mean, Jesus led through washing people's feet, you know? And so why would we expect any different, you know?
Yeah. But, well, in today's world too, that if the deacon, and not just picking on, like, this is no picking on deacons. Like, in fact, I'll give you a teaser. The next time we gather, we're talking about the clergymen, pastors, if you will. So Jesse and I both have that attached to our name, and definitely not your traditional sense of that. But so we'll have plenty to talk about our own shortcomings and everything the next time we gather. But in today's world, you could picture that scenario and a deacon going and drawing a huge attention of everyone. I am gather around. I am back to pick up this turd, and I'm going to do it for the glory of God. And I'm going to try not to get it on my nicely clean suit. But anyway, yeah. But I will say this. I started to say this before you shared that story, and thank you for sharing that one. In case you, if you're a listener, in case you didn't know, the deacons, I hate to spill this secret, but the deacon, if you got any secrets, maybe you can share them too. But let me just tell you, the deacons, and we'll put us pastors in it as well, do not have their life together as so much as it seems.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. You know, a moment of transparency here. I'll put myself out there. You know, if somebody looks at my life from the outside, and, you know, we're all guilty of it. Like when we post social media, like we don't post our worst days, you know, most of the time it's, you know, joyous moments or something cool that we feel like we're a part of or whatever. But, you know, so if you look at my life, it's like, you know, pastor, business owner, you know, whatever, like great, you know, family, that they let me be a part of. I'm not much a part of that, but, they're the great portion of that. And then I called Jesse yesterday. We talked probably an hour, and I'm just, full on complaint fest. And why is this so hard? And why is that? And yeah. So, you know, we all have those moments if we're honest enough to say it. So wherever you're at, the deacons at your church, they, even if they're in a position of power or something like that, if that's the makeup of, they don't have everything figured out either. And that's okay. I'm not saying that's a negative. I think that's every human being that you see, your pastor, your priest, whatever you subscribe to, they're human. You know, they've got just as many issues, if not more, than you do. And so, I think right. That's important to keep in mind as well. But you mentioned the word serve, didn't even really plan on this, but, it's not many times that we go to Saints and Pioneers and we break out the Greek. But the actual word for deacon is diakonos. And that's what it means, is to be a servant. Like, it's literally in the name. So when you select a deacon, it shouldn't be, well, he's a good business person and he's got good financial sense, or he's, you know, well put together and he's got a good life, or what. Like, it literally is the picture of the guy you were talking about. That's the custodian, that's, you know, serving and like doing so behind the scenes, doesn't need the credit, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so, it really is the root of the word. It's actually right. In what the word means, is to serve. And, man, I've known a lot of people that should have been deacons that weren't, and maybe it was because, and one of the big ones, and I've got no problem saying this, I've said it to people before, and he's since been asked as things have kind of loosened up on this ideology. But, and if you're listening, you got this opinion, no problem. It's fine. But the whole issue of divorce, you know, I'm a firm believer. I land on the side of things of the, you know, you hear that one woman man, you know, all the time. To me, that means somebody that's in an active relationship with his wife and it is faithful. If somebody's right. Been divorced, especially, my goodness, if you go back and that person was divorced when they were not a believer, like right. How we're holding that standard and saying, well, you can't be a deacon, AKA servant, in this role because you were divorced. Like, but if you went to prison because you murdered somebody, got out and got your life straight, yeah, come on in, man, you can be a deacon. So never quite understood that one. But my dad is one of those guys. You know, he was divorced a couple times actually before he was a believer. And I mean, you've met my dad. Like, I think the literal definition of a servant, like, does so many right. things absolutely. That people do not know about behind the scenes, and does it with like an affection, compassionately for somebody. And, you know, in fact, no social media presence at all. In fact, he'll even tell somebody when they ask him what his email is, he says, I don't even know how to spell email. So like, he doesn't have an email address. So he's not doing it for the world's attention, but, you know, just, literally is that definition. And even more so, later was asked to be a deacon and turned it down because he felt like there are still people that have that problem with divorced people. So it's like, yeah, I think, you know, I could do it, but, so again, probably even more proof that's what you're looking for in a deacon. So, yeah, so that's the actual word. But back to the bank president illustration, one of the quotes that Wes Seeliger has in his book is saying that the customers, I mean, we can gather who that is. If you go back, the church was even compared to a bank, you know, in a sense, doing God's business. And so the customers would be the members, the parishioners, if you will. It says the customers respect strength. And so there's something about that position of deacon that we've elevated to a point, and quite honestly, we'll talk about it more the next time. We've elevated pastor to too prominent a role as well, in my opinion. So why do you feel like we do that, that as consumers or customers, parishioners, whatever you want, that we respect that strength of your traditional idea of what a deacon is? Why do you think that is? Deacon on a pedestal, if you will, almost.
Well, it's here I think I answer your question with a question. Why in the world do we, I think there's a narcissism mm-hmm. that has seeped into church leadership. And I mentioned to you a while back that we need to do a whole podcast on this, because I think it's a poison that's seeped into the church.
We've met a few along the way.
We've had to walk away from a few.
Just a clue. If you're out there wondering, I want you to get back to that. But if you're out there wondering, have I ever met a narcissist? A big key is if you've gone to a narcissist and told them that they're a narcissist in a nice way, loving way, and they point everything back to you, you are dealing with a narcissist. But anyway,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah. So there's a, for some reason, narcissistic people attract people to themselves. And that's something I think we need to dig into, not just for the show, but I think everybody needs to understand that. Like, and we gravitate towards power. Maybe we think we're going to get power ourselves, or maybe it makes us feel good about ourselves. But I think that's a sort of a poison that sort of leaked into the church, mm-hmm. We are strong when we're weak, in the biblical sense. If you look at the text, there's a lot that says about, you know, Philippians 2, mm-hmm. Is the opposite of narcissism. And Jesus was like, or Paul said, look, be imitators of Christ, who did not consider his position as God something to be held on to. Mm-hmm. Like, he released that as being a human being and took on the role of a bondservant, someone who was the lowest of the low. Right. Yeah. And so there's a, I was reading in 2 Corinthians where Paul talks about how we're jars of clay, how we're mm-hmm. pressed, but we're not crushed, persecuted, not abandoned. Yeah. And he says, we are this way so that the world can see that this power is from God and not from us. Mm. And so there is this sense of power in any hierarchy, in any church, business, whatever. There is this very this sense of the powerful people are at the top, and everybody else is beneath that, but if we are going to live and operate in the kingdom of God, and we are going to usher in the kingdom of God, the rule and reign of God in our world, in our churches, then we have to rethink the whole power thing. We have to rethink the whole power structure, and understand that, man, life in the kingdom is about giving yourself, pouring yourself out. Again, that vessel, jar of clay kind of analogy.
Yeah.
Being filled with God and being able to pour that out into people. And it involves self-sacrifice. It involves laying yourself down. It involves putting other people's needs above your own, mm-hmm. And in a power structure, the powerful are going to attend to their own needs, and they're going to use everyone else to attend to their needs, right? To make them feel good and make them feel like they're in control or whatever. But it is a very it's a mystery to me why we because I don't mean to get off on narcissism again, but it's like people that have those narcissistic tendencies that gravitate towards power. You know, they have an uncanny ability to be able to make people feel good about themselves,
mm-hmm.
but then make them feel like crap.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, and way off topic, but not on the narcissism. You know, most cult leaders, you would put in that narcissistic or manipulative category, which I would say narcissism and manipulation always kind of go hand in hand.
Right.
Joe Rogan has a bit about that. It says, doesn't matter what the cult leader believes. And this is pretty spot on. Like, I mean, there's some comedy in it, unfortunately. But you look back over every cult that's ever existed, for the most part, no matter their beliefs, the cult leader always winds up sleeping with everybody's wives. You know, there's, it always lands there. It's like, God's always going to tell them that. You know, it's like no matter what else he tells him, he's going to tell me, yeah, I need to sleep with your wife. And people let him, you know, and that's the crazy thing is like there's this power and manipulation. And this is not a far stretch of why I bring up cult. I would say this even carefully, and I'm trying to measure my words here because I don't want anyone to like it could happen at our gathering, you know, our church family. There are so many cults that are just your average building with a steeple on top of it. And when I say that is because people have elevated a deacon, they've elevated a pastor, they've elevated a faith family to where if you listen to them, I mean, all they talk about is brother so-and-so, or they talk about our, you know, church or got the t-shirt that says their church name and it's all about their church. And man, you could be talking to them for 40 minutes and not hear the name Jesus, you know, at all about what they do. It's really just kind of become this cultic gathering, if you will, of, you know, just recognizing that power and authority and people just putting their, almost like their trust in man versus, you know, following who Christ is. I mean, I think the whole setup of even church itself of where we gather in these big groups and we just sit and we listen to normally a man, sometimes a woman's words, and just those words, and then we leave. That's all right. That happens. I mean, that's kind of, you know, putting that person on a pedestal like we have done, you know, with deacons and really any other you know, positions within the church. So it kind of gets me to thinking. So if the congregation looks to a deacon and like puts them on a pedestal as being more than a servant, maybe this person of authority or power. And I mean, you've seen that. I'm sure a lot of churches, the deacons are the, you know, every committee that there is, like they're on it, like a personnel committee type thing. Like they do the hiring and the firing. And so it is kind of turned into a position of authority. And maybe that feeds into this question, but if the church itself is putting deacons on a pedestal, why do you think many of those deacons probably feel they have to put off the air, almost like this perfect air about themselves, like they do have it all together, that there can't be this vulnerability of, yeah, I'm a wreck, but I'm a redeemed wreck. You know, it's like they buy into the mythology of, yeah, well, if you're a deacon, it's kind of going back to the Pharisee days of like the oohing and on when people would see them, and these are people that memorized the law backwards and forwards. And but you know who wasn't impressed with them was Jesus. Like he was pretty hacked off at them most of the time. In fact, I've said that a million times, but it's so interesting to me that the times that Jesus really gets mad and starts overturning tables and breaking out whips and all kind of language and vitriol towards them, again, holy, because we know he didn't sin, it's at the religious leaders that should have known better. And so, you know, if you're a deacon listening, I would, you know, do I feel that way? Okay, the church people are kind of putting me on a pedestal, but am I liking that pedestal? And why do I put off an air of, yeah, I am better than you commoners over there in the third row at the, you know, 17th Baptist Church down the road? Like, why do you feel like they feed into that? Maybe some of them. And I know you and I have both met great deacons. Like, I've got many I could name by name. But why do they put that air of having to be almost perfect in a sense, do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. I think, you know, there's this sense of, it's a sense of identity. Like if I, you know, admit that I'm a person with struggle, if I admit that I am a person, if I'm vulnerable, because in the kingdom of God, vulnerability will always precede strength. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a biblical thing, you know, and, you know, we're made, you know, and it's in our weaknesses that we're made strong, you know?
Yeah.
But I think there's this sense of identity, like, I am viewed as this person who is in charge of these things, and I have it together, and I should, but, you know, I think there's a pressure that people put on themselves to keep that up, right?
Mm-hmm.
To maintain that. And I do think, which we've already covered this, for some people, there is a sense of power and trying to be, you know, trying to wield that or whatever in a, maybe an improper way or an unhelpful way or whatever. But I do also think for people who are not necessarily minded with that, somebody comes to them. I mean, think about it for a second. The average guy who got a couple of kids and a wife, and he works a job and he's trying to walk with God, and maybe he has some struggles, but he doesn't have men that he can talk to about it, but he looks good on the outside. Pastor and other deacons come to him and say, look, man, we like you. You've been going here for a while. We want you to be a deacon.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this man probably already has the pressure of, I can't let my struggles come out. I can't talk to my wife about what I'm struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have men in my life that I can talk to about these struggles. And now the veneer that I have put up has got me attention to fill this role. Mm. Now there's even more pressure,
yeah,
to not admit that I struggled, and not admit that. And they'll say, well, I'm a sinner. You know, yeah, everybody's a sinner. You know, it's this general, it's very vague, like, oh, well, everybody's a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but to actually be the kind of person, be the kind of man that you bring people into their struggles and say, you know, look, I need someone to walk with me, someone to pray with me. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think there's not a safety in a lot of church culture, for someone who's in a position of power that kind of position, not necessarily power, but like as a deacon or whatever. There's not a safe environment for them to say, look, man,
yeah,
you know, I don't have it together, man.
Man,
like, I don't.
Such a great, like, yeah, such a great, you know, point. Well, you've been in those meetings before where you've probably seen somebody confess something and they realize right away they were in the wrong company to do that. I've seen it.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, they're over there like Will Ferrell on the couch in Old School's like, I thought we were in the trust tree. Were we not?
Yeah.
Like, well, I thought this was a safe place. The counselors are like, it's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that. But anyway.
Well, I will give you a personal story.
Yeah.
I don't really care if people, whoever hears this or whatever, but
yeah,
I was
just no names,
you know,
be vague.
Right.
Yeah.
I was in a position of leadership at a church,
mm-hmm,
and we were having a leadership meeting, and somehow the meeting, and it was just men, the leaders of the church. And somehow the meeting kind of got into struggle. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a couple of us, I was one of them, that would always kind of lead those conversations like, guys, I'm just not doing good. Like, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
And I was going through this phase in my life where I had this weird deal where I was started kind of doubting,
mm-hmm,
like the faith deal and the whole, just basic truths of the Christian faith. Like, the death and the resurrection of Jesus, mm-hmm. and some of the miraculous things that it talks about in the Bible and stuff. And I had been, you know, listening to people and reading people and, you know, and probably talking through some of those things with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of playing on my mind, and I was in that environment, and we were coming up on Easter, and we were about to plan our Easter. We always had a big Easter service. We did this outdoor thing at a park, and we'd do a baptism, and it was always this big deal.
Sunrise service.
Sunrise service, right. I made the statement. I said, you know, sometimes this whole resurrection thing really, really messes with my head. Like, mm-hmm. it's hard to believe.
Yeah.
And there was a guy sitting directly across from me, and I remember his face. Mm-hmm. And it was like you just said, oh, this was the wrong environment to talk about that.
Yeah.
And he's like, he looked at me and was like, so you doubt that Jesus was resurrected?
Yeah.
I said, well, yeah, sometimes. And he was like, well, he got visibly upset with me.
Yeah.
And so I tried to talk it through with him, but he was so flustered that I had made this confession. And I said, well, you know, people in the Bible doubt it. And he shook his head like, what? Like, who?
Yeah.
Like, I want to talk to these people.
Had that most sound like, he had it sound like Lil Johnny said, what?
Yeah, what?
Okay.
But this mug got pissed off at me because I just confessed something, you know, not, hey, well, man, let's pray about that. Let's talk. And I said, well, you know, you read the Psalms. I mean, you definitely get a sense that King David was, you know, where are you, Lord? Like, what's like there's definitely a sense that David had his doubts about God's faithfulness, right?
Yeah.
And maybe not God's existence, but definitely if God was good or God mm-hmm. cared.
Yeah.
There's definitely the sense.
In the same psalm, right. He'll literally know, all this, are you even listening? Are you ready? And he gets to the end, and he's like, but I'll praise you forever.
Right. Yeah. Well, this guy got really pissed off at me. And I was like, I say that to point this out. This is what's so devastating about that reaction is because I knew, at least with that one dude, I can never be honest with him again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, that's it. Like, I can't be honest with that guy. Like, I take him off the list of people that you can be truthful around. Right.
Yeah.
And so you think about how, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are super rigid. Like, you know, if you're going to be in a position of power, you should never doubt. He told me, he said, you are a leader at this church. How could you say that?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and I was a younger believer back then. And so I'm sitting there just kind of looking around like, well, shit, man. Like, what?
Yeah, it probably rocked you, making you doubt even more.
Absolutely. Like, I went home that day going, maybe I don't need to be a leader anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to step away.
I can tell, you know this, because we've talked about it at you know, at lengths, and will again. My name is Keith, and I'm a pastor of the church at Southside. I am co-hosting a podcast right now about our faith and beliefs and everything, and I doubt all the time. Like, it creeps in. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because we do have to have faith. I mean, that's just plain and simple. We feel that we can commune with Jesus in, you know, in our heart, in our mind, our spirit, however you want to say that. You know, his word still speaks, obviously, you know, worship song, all this stuff. I mean, are ways that we feel like God communicates with his children. But at the same time, brother, you got to have faith that is what you're really experiencing. And so there are doubts. I can tell you this, buddy, you have something like I went through last year with my sickness and everything. And you don't think your faith's not called into question when they're starting to throw out the possibility of life and death stuff. Like, man, have I really put all my chips in on the right table? And yeah. and I would yeah. even go further than that, than just some, you know, redneck like me. The literal disciples, I mean, you mentioned David, and that's a great example, but the literal disciples, the 12 that walked with Jesus, that, by the way, probably a good couple handful of times told them plainly, I'm going to be handed over to sinful men, crucified, and raised on the third day. And when it happens, and all it, Peter denies, Thomas, like, I won't believe till I put my hands, you know, in the nail-scarred hands and all this in his side. Like, when the ladies come and tell the disciples, I mean, Peter and John, which John said he was faster, runs off to the tomb, like, in disbelief, like, can it be? Like, they right. doubted until they saw him. Right. You know, I mean, so like yeah. the literal people that walked with him. And so if anyone's out there told you, the listener, because of your doubts, your this or that, let me just tell you, if you have doubts, you're in good company. That's completely normal. But what we do is we settle back in. We, hey, Jesus, like, remind me that you're here. You know, remind me that you're real. You've shown me in this way. You were there for me in this. And you've got to go back and just constantly preach the gospel to yourselves, because it there's a part of it that the old saying that we have, you know, in our world is, it's, you know, if it's too good to be true, that creeps into our mind of like, well, maybe it is too good to be true. And there's nothing right. there's nothing wrong with going back to that part.
Right.
But getting back to this, it says, too, that the bank president is, and this is a quote from the book, he's a busy man. He protects the money, supervises the tellers, you know, the other workers in the bank, presides over the executive board, pacifies customers, and most importantly, opens new accounts. If you think about right. it in that, you know, this huge responsibility that's put on somebody that really – if you look at the scriptural definition, was waiting on tables and taking care of widows, you know, was the original job description. In fact,
right.
and I definitely cannot get in and wouldn't get into names, but I'm sitting in a office where we record typically together that I was sitting in one day years and years ago, and a church I was not connected with at the time. A deacon comes to me and tells me that, and this was the, Jesse, I promise, this was the actual wording. We're going to run off, and they were talking about a pastor. And I looked him wow. dead in the eyes, and I said, this was a deacon body, you know, that he was a part of. I said, you ought to be busy, so busy waiting tables and serving people that you don't have time to make decisions like this. Right. And it was if like yeah. smell and salt of like, how dare I? Like, I mean, it was not a good meeting. But I mean, I stand on what I said. You know, there was ways that got addressed later. I probably could have handled better, and no need to get into that. But, you know, you learn from those things. And I tell you, I think you and I have learned from those. We don't always get things right. In fact, I know that even as a pastor in the way we're doing things now, and, you know, again, no names necessary, that I'm a villain in some people's story because of ruffled feathers or, you know, didn't get their way or whatever. And the ironic part that in some of those cases, it's the, you know, your age old, like, well, dictator, or you get your way all the time. And you know this, like our setup, because of we're so believing in that these earthly positions have way too much power. And we'll get into more of this on the pastor thing the next time we talk. But it goes with deacons as well. You and I lead in a group that is, we just call a leadership team. We don't have deacons or elders, which we really do. We just don't call them that. And this is a team made up of men and women, which I would even say this here to me, and whether you call it a deacon, you do any of that stuff, that's for you to decide how your beliefs are on that. But to me, if you're not including women in leadership roles, you're missing out on some people that were just as much created in the image of God as a man is, okay?
Right.
You know,
right.
this fathering, mothering aspect, you know, I've got my own views on pastor with that, get into that for another day, another time. But we find it invaluable for our ladies to be involved in leadership, because how many times, Jesse, have you talked with Caroline on something that you guys have going on, and she gives you that perspective because your brain doesn't work the way that hers does. You're like, oh man, that this really makes sense, you know, of something never would have thought. Like I do that all the time with Jamie. Right. It's like, I mean, that's why we are a team. You know, God gives us insight into that. God brings us to a place of like this working together. It's like, why would he bring this family together as a church family and not have women involved on that? But that's what we do. We sit at a table, whether that be from a text side of things and a text message, or a literal table, and everybody's got one vote at the table. And right. And you've been in it. Like we try to pray and like press pause on things, and like, hey, here's an issue that's going on. We had one the other day about the building situation, and we said, here's a deal that we're going to do, you know, on this building, but let's don't even vote on it right now. Let's everybody leave here, pray, and we'll get back together, because we've just learned that if we jump the gun and we start having these positions of authority and start doing these dictator moves or this manipulative or narcissistic, any of the things we've talked about, we're going to miss what God has for us.
Right.
You know? So it's not that way, unfortunately. But what we are seeing, I wanted to mention this to you, is a trend. And it's no wonder, because of the pressure that's put on people to be perfect, the pressure of people to always be present. I mean, I've been at places that if you're a deacon, like you better be there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, you know, all of the things, special events. Like if you miss, where were you? You know, it was kind of the attitude that you get. And so with all that pressure to perform and be perfect and all this, more and more people are quitting the role of deacons, elders, leaders, whatever they're called in your church. They're either quitting those positions from burnout, or they're simply just not taking them because they know the pressure and the, you know, the requirements. It's just like Jesus having that conversation with the Pharisees of like, you put so much on people that you can't even do yourself. Right. You know, like I go back to that one where you confess to the guy. I just about bet. I don't know a single believer. I feel like I've even read stuff about Billy Graham having doubts. Right. I don't know a single believer that's never. And it's probably one of those things, the old saying about, you know, throwing the rock in a pack of dogs and the one that hits, the one that yelps. You know, that guy probably was dealing with doubt on his own, and it just called it to the carpet of like, I'm not bold enough to say it out loud though. You know, maybe not. Maybe he's super Christian and never had a doubt, and you know, maybe I'm off on that. But I just think everybody you've encountered that's a believer has had to have some kind of doubt, it even if it's to the level of, is God really good? To me, that's still doubting the character of God. You may not be doubting that he exists or Jesus really existed, but doubting his goodness is the same thing as doubt of his existence.
Right.
Because his overall existence is good, right? So you've had doubts. If you're listening, if you are listening to this podcast, I'm just going to say you're probably saying amen. I got them right now.
Well, and I think, too,
there's nothing wrong with
speaking,
it.
and I will say, too, I am a much stronger believer now than I was 20 years ago. And I believe the reason is because I've waded through those doubts.
Yeah.
And I think doubt is I think it leads you to a deeper faith. I think it can lead you away from faith, certainly.
Right.
Man, I think God's not going to waste any moment of your life, any season of your life. So if there's a season of doubt, if that is prayerfully handled and brought to the Lord, and not in a way of God proved to me that, you know, A, B, and C is real or whatever, but in a way that's like, God, help my heart, man. Like, and that's what we should do. That's what church leadership should be about. It shouldn't be shunning someone because they have struggle like that. It should be, man, let's walk together through this and let's prayerfully talk through this. I mean, Man, now I know for a fact now with the group that we have, the men that we walk with, they say, hey, let's stop now. Let's just invite God into this. Mm-hmm. If you're struggling with this, man, yep. Let's invite God. Let's take an opportunity. It's an opportunity. Man, let's walk with God deeply here, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that's the mark of a true leader.
That's right. Well, and if you're having doubts, you're listening to this, be careful who you go to. And I don't mean that in a sense, yes, be careful, like in Jesse's illustration of, you don't want to tell even the wrong believer, you know, pray about that, seek God on that. But also I would encourage, if you've got doubts, don't go to your atheist friend and say, you know, I'm really doubting God right now, because they're going to feed into that. Go to a trusted brother or sister that you know you can be honest with. Like I called, you know, you, Jesse, you know where all the bodies are buried in my life. I mean, you know the secrets.
Right.
And it's like nothing horrific, none of that stuff. And, you know, but Jesse and I have that kind of relationship where if it's the vent of just a string of curse words that just like, man, I'm just spiraling right now. The next time I call him, he's not going to be like, you know, you really need to get your stuff together. Like, it's always melt with biblical counsel, oftentimes prayer, like on the spot, or a word of wisdom, or, hey, consider this, or send in a song, hey, listen to this, you know, a text later of, hey, I'm praying for you. Get you a friend like that. And if you don't have that for the time being, if you're listening to this and you're really struggling with doubt, shoot us a message on social media. Let us, you know, offer some insight into that. We'll be glad to do that as well. But if you're a deacon or considering being a deacon, you've got to decide one or two things. You're either going to handle it like a boss or a manager, or you're going to handle it like a servant. And the literal word servant is what a deacon is. And so I'd encourage you on that. I love this quote. I got to give you this one, and I got to take you to a movie. You know me, and you'll go to a movie real quick. See if you know or like this movie. But here's what he says about the bank president illustration. He says that this deacon puts on quite a show, but he's a tenderfoot on the inside. Wouldn't last 2 days on Life on the Trail. And it took me to a movie. Are you a Young Guns fan? Did you like that movie? Oh, man.
I did not like that movie.
One or two.
I didn't say I don't like it. I think I have seen the movie. I saw the first one years ago.
Right.
And I haven't went back to it. So I need to go back to it.
It's a good one. All right. Yeah. But have you watched Young Guns 2?
No, I've not.
Okay. Oddly enough, I love Young Guns 1. I think Young Guns 2 may be my favorite, and you can't normally say that about a sequel. So you know enough of the history, though, of you know, Young Guns is about Billy the Kid,
right.
or you know, and his gang. Well, in Young Guns 2, if you know the history of, you know, Billy the Kid, like the real person, it winds up, if you believe this, or this could be a giant conspiracy that he never was killed. But if he was killed the way they say, that he was killed by a former friend named Pat Garrett. He became sheriff. They went to him. Well, he's chasing his old pal Billy the Kid through everything in Young Guns 2. And this part is historically accurate. He has somebody follow along with him on the journey to write this book because he wants to be considered as this hero, right? The one that caught Billy the Kid, the one that killed Billy the Kid, any of these things. Well, in the movie, it's this character, and I can picture him, you know, picture the guy. I can't remember his name. He's been in other stuff. But every time something happens on the trail, I mean, they're facing Billy the Kid. I mean, there's bullets flying. There's all this action. They come up on, like, Indian territory, all of these things, this mishaps in the Wild West. And this rider, I mean, he's a tenderfoot, right? Like, he's not a cowboy. He's not one of these rough and gruff, like the sheriff type, or he's not with Billy the Kid and his renegades and all this. Every time something happens, he has this, he's like, all right, everybody, he's like, stop. And he's like, I got to have a movement. And he's talking about like he's got to go to the bathroom. And so they mock him the whole time until one thing, it really gets serious. And one of even the tough guys, he kind of mocks him in that moment. He says, I think I just had a movement. But that was the idea I get of this tenderfoot. It's like, yeah, you put on this big show and you act like everything's together, but when stuff really hits the fan and it calls for a life on the trail, like, hey, boot to dirt. We got a hill to climb. It's like it's a tenderfoot because it's all a facade. Like you've put on this outward expression of, yeah, I've got everything together, but you're also not a confidant enough for somebody to tell you, like, hey, I'm doubting. Mm. You know, without judging them or without being religious or any of those things. And again, you and I have met some wonderful deacons. I have met some people, you know, at my home church, other churches that I've served that are the literal definition of a deacon. Like they take care of people when they're given names or families, they minister to them, all of this stuff. And then I've seen the others, unfortunately, you know, where it's like they're just taking it for the title. Serving is last on their thing. And if it came down to a real spiritual battle, quite honestly, it may not be somebody that you would want, you know, on your side.
Mm,
and so if you're considering that, you know, been asked to be a deacon, I just say, which one are you going to be? You know, are you going to be that boss, the manager, the position of authority? Or are you literally looking at it to be like Jesus and say, he armed himself with a basin and towel? It's my job to wash the feet of the people that he puts. If they give you a list of families, how can I serve those families? That's what he's called you to do. And so that kind of feeds in, and we've talked more about the negative aspects and won't talk as long about the positive, but I think you can see the contrast very easy. And so you go from this bank president, but the image and pioneer theology of the deacon is a dishwasher, a servant of the cook who is in turn servant to the pioneers. Wow. And this is what it says, how it should be. The strongest pioneer in camp, most patient, keen eyes and ears. He can smell trouble brewing before anyone else can. First off to help when the wagons get stuck, when the cook needs a hand, or when a ruffled pioneer's feelings need soothing.
Yeah.
Man, isn't that a beautiful image of a deacon, what a deacon should be, a dishwasher? You know, there's not much fanfare over washing dishes.
Right.
Or picking up dog poop, you know, on the church step. But that's really, we're all called to that. Like there ought to be that characteristic of deacon, whether you hold the title or not. Like if you're called into salvation, you are called to serve. You're not called to just sit there, right?
Right, right.
How do you see those two comparing from the bank president to a dishwasher?
Well, you know, again, I think it comes back to identity, right? Because if you are in any role in your life, if you're, whether it's a job or whether it's, you know, role as a husband or anybody, I think there are basically two types of people. I think there are people that are trying to extract from people around them. They're trying to extract affirmation. They're trying to extract, you know, some sort of sense of value from around them, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to withdraw from the world around them their sense of self-worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those people are always going to try and get the highest position. They're always going to try and get the highest seat at the table because they need that position. They need that place to be able to extract from the world around them, right? Then you have people like what he's saying here, the dishwasher in pioneer theology. These are the people who are confident in who they are. They already have the affirmation, the sense of worth from Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So those people are not extracting from people around them. Those people are pouring themselves out to people around them.
That's a great point.
Because if we are, 2 Corinthians, if we are vessels, what do you do with a vessel?
Mm.
You pour it out. Yeah. That's what it's for. It's for holding liquid for a certain time. And then, or holding something for a certain time until it's needed and it's poured out.
Yeah.
So if you are getting from God your sense of worth, your sense of value, your sense of affirmation, if you are getting that from God, God is pouring that into the vessel that is your life, and you are pouring that out into people around you. And not in a way that says, in ways that they may never know that it's you. Mm-hmm. Like coming in early to a church service or whatever, and preparing a space, praying over a seat that someone's going to sit in.
Yeah.
Cleaning a space so that somebody doesn't have to do it when they get there. It's all these little things that servant leaders, we'll mm-hmm. call them, which I've heard them call that before. Like, yeah. That's what they do, right? Because they're not showing up early doing something saying, hey, look at what I'm doing. They're doing it because they're filled up
yeah.
by the God that they know loves them.
Right.
And they are just they're so excited to come and just dump that out into the lives of people around them.
Yeah.
So I think that's the contrast, you know. It's like, are you trying to take?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was going to say the boss or the manager type, the position of authority, that gets the fanfare. Washing dishes doesn't get much fanfare. Like, nobody's right. live streaming at a church facility right now when, hey, Frank's washing the dishes, y'all. Let's go in here and, like, you know, all the likes and the loves and, you know, care emojis that are coming across of thanks, Frank. You know, that goes unnoticed. Right. But I'll tell you this, it doesn't go unnoticed, you know, by God. And I don't think it goes Absolutely. Unnoticed by the people that you're serving either. I've shared this before. A couple beautiful things I see sometimes teaching at Southside. One I always love is when people sleep. I've talked about that before, the refuge that's found there, the safety. A very close second, and I saw it not too long ago, and I think it was our sister Bonnie. Bonnie Wilson, shout out to you if you're listening. Our apologies to Bo Wilson. We don't have time to mention you, but Bonnie, I'm teaching one time and wasn't long ago, and I look and obviously somebody, you know, I would like to think, you know, moved by the message that God was speaking, could have been totally unrelated, but, you know, just see Bonnie like praying, you know, with them during everything's going on. People are walking around, got plates of food, you know, I'm teaching, people are talking, some people listening, some people sleeping, all this stuff. And you just got right there in the middle of all that kind of movement and chaos at times. You know, Bonnie just holding hands with a young lady and just praying over. And to me, that's what it's like, taking a moment of like, yeah, I could be listening or I could be doing this or I could be doing that, but stopping and just taking somebody to God. I mean, that's sometimes the servant thing that we think about is like, man, I just don't have time to do this. Like, can you stop when somebody says, hey man, you know, when you think about it, will you pray for me this week? Stop and pray for them right then. My dad, he's wonderful at that. We had a pastor that taught us that years ago of like, you know, just a practical side. You may forget later, you know. I mean, we've got technology in our pocket where we can make a note, but, you know, somebody asks for prayer. If you got time, man, stop and pray for them then. Like with right. them, let them know, hey, yeah, I got you and I'll keep doing it, you know, when we leave this place. But, well, I got two quotes I wanted to finish this out on, I think are pretty awesome. On the dishwasher, Wes says this: the dishwasher wants the pioneers to have good grub and strength for the trail. That's his main concern, is just taking care of the other pioneers, knows that that expands the ministry versus just them doing it alone. But this is my favorite image of the whole thing, because it has the tendency, when you start thinking about serving, and you're talking about especially a man in this position, you think, well, you know, this like just always serving, always loving, always compassionate. And like, yes, those are qualities of Jesus. But Jesus also was a grown, strong enough man that he overturned mighty wood tables. You know, they weren't plastic tables back then at the temple. Drives out a crowd with a whip. I'm going to say he was pretty fierce. He was a carpenter's son. In the earthly sense, before power tools, like, he was a man's man to endure what he did on the cross. But yes, a peace loving, you know, all this stuff. Listen to what Wes says about the dishwasher servant. Normally a peace loving man, but when their fellow pioneers are attacked, they fight like a grizzly bear.
Mm.
I love it.
Mm.
I mean, yeah. you can be both. You can be very right. compassionate, loving, tender. I think that's what God pushes us towards. But there's also a place for a righteous anger. If those that we love and serve are coming under attack, we've had that definitely in actual physical sense, you know, sometimes with where we gather. Fortunately, it's never escalated to the point we've actually had to get involved, but getting between two individuals or, something like that. And so, you know, there's a time and a place for both. And so I just wanted to mention that quote from the fact of, I don't want people to hear, oh, to be a deacon, you just got to have, you know, palm olive, you know, soft hands from dishwashing all day and, you know, talk all feminine and, you know, all this. It's like, no, when it comes time, you know, you can be a righteous defender of things that need defending as well.
Right.
And so right. I think both. That's who Jesus is and was, you know, in an earthly sense.
Well, and you mentioned the scene of Jesus flipping over the tables.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus did that. Jesus didn't do it just because it pissed him off.
Yeah.
It did, but yeah. that was not the – Jesus responded in that way. In the service of love for others.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is huge. Like we don't just get, you know, blow our top with people because of an injustice or whatever. Like godly people will almost always react fiercely mm-hmm. in the service of love for others. And that's what church leadership is really comes down to.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, especially in this servant role, it's like, we can respond, you know, according to our own, just our own anger, to certain things. And it's not to say there's not a place for that, but I think it will always be in the service of love.
Yeah. Well, and right. we don't get to use ourselves as a good example. A lot of times, normally we paint ourselves in the bad example, but I can think of one that came to mind, and it involved picking up some Fruit Loops. If you remember that story, we won't share that part. But we had a guy, and it's where we currently serve. It was years ago, just dressing down his woman that he was with. And Jesse and I both at the same time hear it. And it's like, yeah, we're out there loving on folks and, you know, telling them that Jesus is here to save and firmly believe all that. You know, he's here and, you know, he's available. And then we hear this guy, and he's, I mean, really yelling at this, you know, defenseless woman, especially in, you know, the state she was in. And Jesse and I both ran over and was like, nope, not happening here. And, you know, was like, you need to apologize. And he starts looking at me and you, I'm sorry. And you and I both at the same time was like, not to us. You need to apologize to her. It's like, we don't, that doesn't happen here. And so that's kind of the mentality you have. It's like, yeah, we're washing feet, we're dishwashers, all that stuff that we're trying to be, and we don't get that right all the time, but that's our hope, that's our aim. But at the same time, if one of ours is, you know, and I say ours, you know what I mean, that we're being put in a position of leadership with, not over but with, see somebody being, in this case, like almost physically attacked, not on our watch, you know, that's what yeah. he calls us to, you know? And so,
right.
I think a couple things stick out for me. Again, if you're considering these roles, one of these roles, boss or manager or servant. I mean, that's your only two options. I don't think there's room for the middle. I think you've got to be a servant at heart and then, yeah, defend when defending needs to happen. And then also I think I just keep going back in my head to close with that. If you're doubting, I think that's okay. I think that puts you in good company. And reach out to somebody, you know, somebody that you trust and offer it again. If you don't have that, luxury, reach out to Jesse or I on social media. I'd love to connect with you and help with that any kind of way we can. And hey, when you message us, it might be a day that he and I are doubting, and we may need your help as well. So we'll get through that together. But, man, good stuff. We made it through a technology episode. If all this records and you hear this, then we've got the capability to do interviews. So hopefully that'll be coming up soon and all that good stuff. So, Jesse, thank you for joining me, man.
Yeah, man. It was great.
Yes, sir.
Another good one.
Yes, sir. Having you on the phone was a lot better than sitting up here just talking by myself. So I enjoyed that part of it. But thank the Lord for technology. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next time. I'm going to hit us with some cool Jesse Crow and the Unrest music here to close us out. What does that mean to close us out? I'm going to close.
I don't know what that means.
Thank you, Bill O'Reilly, for that gold. Don't hold us responsible for the language if you go listen, but it is pretty funny. All right, brother. I love you. I'm going to hit this music, and we'll be done here today. So join us next time on Saints and Pioneers. Thank you, guys.